Picture this. It is 2 in the morning.
Yeah, the classic 2 in the morning
All
scenario.
right. The house is completely quiet, but your kitchen table is just covered in glossy assisted living brochures, and your laptop has, a dozen tabs
Oh,
open.
absolutely. We have all been there.
You are familiar with elder care on a surface level. Perhaps you have navigated caregivers or, well, home modifications before, but now you are staring down a transition that feels entirely different.
Because you are looking for a safe place for a parent who can no longer live alone safely. And, as two editors from California Care Compass, we know exactly what happens next.
Yeah, you start reading these brochures and you keep running into the same bold, reassuring phrase, licensed RCFE.
It is printed on every website, it is stamped on every piece of marketing material, and it just sounds incredibly official.
It really does. But when you are the one signing the contract, a generic stamp of approval is not enough. You need to know the mechanical reality of what that license actually mandates.
Exactly, you need the facts.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission for this deep dive is to translate the legal realities behind that RCFE designation so you can make highly informed, confident decisions.
Which is so important, because before we can even analyze what the license guarantees, we have to establish the foundational legal definition of the building itself.
We really need to define the paradigm here.
Right, so RCFE stands for Residential Care Facility for the Elderly. In California, that is the overarching legal umbrella for what the public generally calls assisted living or board and care homes.
Just a big umbrella term.
Yes, exactly. But the most critical insight you can take away from our conversation today is understanding the fundamental model of care. An RCFE is a social model of care. It is absolutely not a medical model of care.
Wow. That distinction completely changes the equation. I mean, we are so used to viewing elder care through a clinical lens.
What's fascinating here is how deeply ingrained that clinical bias actually is. A hospital or a skilled nursing facility operates under a medical model.
Right, because their primary directive is to treat and cure medical conditions.
Exactly. An RCFE operates under a completely different mandate. Its fundamental purpose is just to provide a home. It offers housing, meals, and personal assistance to individuals who are generally medically stable, but require supervision and help with their daily routines.
So you are essentially evaluating a specialized real estate lease, with a built-in maid and chaperone
That
service.
is a great way to put it.
You are not checking your parent into a mini hospital. You are finding them a supported residence. That means you have to look at the facility like a landlord-tenant relationship rather than a doctor-patient relationship.
That is the perfect mental shift. And because it is a social model, it is regulated like a home.
Okay, so who actually regulates it?
Well, the agency responsible for licensing and overseeing every single RCFE in the state is the California Department of Social Services.
The California Department of Social Services. Got it.
Specifically, it falls under their Community Care Licensing Division. So you are not dealing with the health department.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, the inspectors who walk the halls of these facilities are social services analysts. They are not medical surveyors checking clinical charts. They are evaluating quality of life, basic safety, and community integration.
Knowing that the California Department of Social Services is the ultimate authority gives you a very clear target for your research.
It really does.
Let us look at what those social services analysts are actually enforcing. Since the goal is a safe community setting, there are baseline standards required just to keep the doors open, right?
Absolutely, the absolute floor of care.
Instead of looking at a laundry list, I like to divide these baseline guarantees into two categories. First, we have basic physical survival, and second, we have bodily maintenance. Let us start with survival.
Okay, physical survival under an RCFE license requires a physically safe environment, reliable food, and constant supervision.
Which sounds basic, but it is huge.
It is. Before a facility even opens, the Community Care Licensing Division evaluates the physical plant. They mandate functional fire alarms, secure perimeters, and specific food sanitation standards.
And they have to feed them, obviously.
Right. They also mandate 3 nutritious meals a day, served at regular intervals.
No, I have to point out, a state inspector is not a culinary expert. The license guarantees that calories and basic nutritional requirements are met, but it does not guarantee a 5-star dining experience.
No, definitely not.
You still have to eat lunch there yourself to know if the food is actually palatable.
True, very true. And the final pillar of that physical survival is basic 24-hour supervision. The state mandates minimum staffing ratios based on the facility size and the time of day.
So someone is always awake.
Yes. The core guarantee is that there is always someone awake and on duty, even at 3 in the morning. If a resident falls out of bed in the middle of the night, someone is there to respond.
That covers the baseline survival. Now let us talk about bodily maintenance, which covers activities of daily living or ADLs and medication.
Right, the hands-on care.
The license guarantees hands-on physical assistance with daily routines, like bathing, dressing, and transferring from a chair to a bed. But I want to pause here and push back on the medication aspect.
Okay, let's get into it.
The state says facilities provide medication management. On paper, reminding someone to take a pill sounds really straightforward.
It does sound simple.
But what if a parent is experiencing cognitive decline and cannot remember their dosage? Or, you know, what if their doctor prescribes a sliding scale insulin regimen? Where is the legal boundary?
That boundary is exactly where well-intentioned families get blindsided. The key legal distinction rests entirely on two words, assist versus administer.
Assist versus administer.
Under a standard RCFE license, the staff can only assist a resident with medications. They cannot administer medication in a clinical sense.
Break that down mechanically for us. What does assist actually look like in practice?
Assisting means a caregiver can remind your parent that it is time for their medication. They can open a childproof cap. They can read the prescription label out loud.
Okay, so very hands-off clinically.
Right. They can hand the resident a pre-poured cup of pills. And they maintain a daily log to document that the resident took the medication. But the caregiver cannot make clinical judgment calls.
Because they are non-medical staff.
Precisely. Let us look at a PRN medication, which means take as needed.
Like a painkiller.
Exactly. If a doctor prescribes a painkiller to be taken as needed, a non-medical caregiver is not legally qualified to assess your parent's pain level and decide it is time for a pill.
Oh, wow. I did not realize that.
Yeah, the resident must have the cognitive ability to request that specific medication themselves. Furthermore, standard caregivers cannot give injections.
So no insulin shots.
Right. If your parent needs insulin, the caregiver cannot read a blood sugar monitor, calculate the required dose from a sliding scale, and inject the resident. That is clinical administration.
That is a massive paradigm shift. The caregiver's role is strictly to provide the physical coordination necessary so a resident can take their own medicine as prescribed. They cannot act as proxy nurses.
They cannot. And realizing that staff cannot administer medication naturally leads families to panic when they anticipate a decline in health.
So what does this all mean? I mean, if a parent is thriving in an assisted living community, but they suddenly require a catheter, or they face a terminal diagnosis requiring intensive comfort care, do they face an immediate eviction?
That is the fear, yes.
Do they have to pack up and move to a clinical nursing home during a crisis?
This raises an important question. And fortunately, the regulatory framework has built-in flexibility. To understand it, we first have to recognize what a standard license explicitly forbids.
Okay, what is off limits?
A baseline RCFE cannot provide skilled nursing care. They cannot manage IV lines, they cannot perform sterile wound care, and they do not have a doctor or registered nurse on duty 24/7.
Right, because the entire system relies on residents being generally medically stable.
Exactly. They are forbidden from accepting residents with highly unstable, unpredictable medical conditions. However, the state of California allows for mechanisms called waivers and exceptions.
Waivers and exceptions.
Yes. If a resident develops a restricted health condition, the facility can formally apply to the Community Care Licensing Division to keep that resident in their home.
I imagine the state does not just hand those out freely, though. What is the mechanism for getting an exception approved?
The facility must submit an ironclad, highly detailed care plan, proving they can handle the condition without compromising the social model environment.
Could you give an example?
Sure. For instance, if a resident needs daily insulin injections, the facility might prove they have contracted a licensed visiting nurse from a home health agency.
Oh, I see.
The visiting nurse handles the clinical administration, while the facility staff continues to handle the daily meals and supervision.
That makes total sense. The hospice waiver is arguably the most impactful example of this coordination, right?
It is a perfect illustration. Under a standard license, providing end-of-life care is beyond the scope of an RCFE. But if the facility applies for and receives a specific hospice waiver, they can partner directly with a licensed medical hospice agency.
Let us map out how that works on the ground. You have the standard caregivers and the visiting medical team operating in the same room.
Yes, but the division of labor is strictly defined. The medical hospice agency sends in their own registered nurses, physicians, and social workers.
And they handle all the medical stuff.
Exactly. That external medical team manages the pain, adjusts the clinical medications, and provides expert palliative care. Meanwhile, the regular RCFE staff maintains their standard duties.
So they are still doing the cooking and cleaning.
Right. They change the linens, they bring the meals, and they help with personal hygiene.
That allows a parent to age in place, surrounded by their own furniture and familiar caregivers, rather than spending their final weeks in a sterile hospital ward.
It is a beautiful system when it works.
It really is.
Yeah.
But the critical takeaway for you as the consumer is that you cannot just assume a facility has these capabilities.
No, absolutely not.
The license hanging in the lobby looks identical whether they have zero exceptions or a dozen waivers. You have to ask the administrator directly which specific waivers they currently hold and maintain.
You have to be proactive.
Yeah.
And that proactive mindset applies to every aspect of your research.
Definitely.
Now that we understand the legal boundaries and the rules these facilities must operate under, we need to talk about how you independently verify if a specific community is actually playing by those rules.
Okay.
You do not have to rely on their marketing department.
You can act as your own private investigator.
Exactly.
The state of California makes this remarkably transparent through the California Department of Social Services online search portal. It is often referred to as the Find Licensed Care Database.
Yes, it is a great tool.
This is a public clearinghouse of every single licensed facility in the state.
When you pull up a facility on this portal, your very first checkpoint is the basic license status. You need to see the word licensed in an active state.
And if you don't,
if the portal lists the status as pending, revoked, or on probation, you treat that as a non-negotiable red flag.
Walk away immediately. Assuming the license is active and in good standing, you dive into the compliance history. This is where you strike gold.
It really is.
The portal gives you direct, public access to the inspection reports written by the Community Care Licensing Division analysts. You can read the actual field notes from the state inspectors who walk the floor.
And when you open those documents, you are looking for citations.
Citations. Okay.
A citation is a formal record of a rule violation. The state categorizes these by severity. A type A citation is the most severe level.
Type A.
Right. It indicates that the social services analyst discovered an immediate palpable risk to the health, safety, or personal rights of the residents.
So a major safety issue.
Yes. A type B citation still represents a violation of the legal code, but it does not pose an immediate life-threatening danger.
Let us ground that in a realistic scenario. Suppose a facility gets a type A citation for understaffing on the night shift. How does an inspector even uncover that?
An analyst might arrive unannounced for a random inspection. They pull the facility's employee timesheets and cross-reference them with the resident census for that specific week.
Oh, wow. They go right for the paperwork.
They do. If the law requires two awake staff members for that population size, and the timesheets show only one person clocked in between midnight and 6 a.m, that is a direct threat to resident safety in the event of a fire or a fall.
And they just write them up?
The analyst issues a type A citation immediately.
And when a citation is issued, the facility cannot just ignore it. They are required to submit what the state calls a plan of correction.
Yes, and the plan of correction is often more revealing than the citation itself. The facility must document, in writing, the exact mechanical steps they will take to fix the violation.
So in our understaffing example, what would they do?
The facility might detail a new contract with a temporary staffing agency to guarantee coverage, alongside a revised recruitment strategy for permanent night shift workers.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, your goal as a family member is not to hunt for a facility with a flawless, completely spotless record.
Right, because human care environments are complex.
Exactly. Perfection is a myth. A minor paperwork error regarding a staff training module from 4 years ago does not mean the building is unsafe. You are looking for systemic patterns.
Patterns tell the true story. One missed signature on a medication log is a human error. 8 citations for medication mismanagement across 3 different inspections indicates a systemic failure in staff training or management oversight.
That makes a lot of sense.
You want to see how the facility responds. Do they take ownership in their plan of correction and resolve the issue quickly? Or do you see the same type of citation appearing year after year?
Reading those reports gives you incredible leverage. When you eventually walk into a facility for a tour, you are no longer just listening to the sales pitch. You can ask highly targeted questions based on their actual public record.
It puts you in control.
But let us look at the reactive side of the equation. Even with rigorous upfront research on the state portal, reality is messy. Care plans change, communication breaks down, and mistakes happen after move-in day.
Unfortunately, yes, they do.
How do you protect a loved one when problems arise while they are living in the facility?
You need a clear escalation strategy. The very first step is always internal, direct communication. You approach the facility administrator.
Just talk to them first.
Yes. Put your concerns in writing to create a paper trail. Keep your tone objective. State precisely what you observed. Detail how it deviates from the agreed-upon care plan, and clearly outline the resolution you expect. Give the management team the opportunity to correct the failure internally.
But if the administrator is unresponsive, or, you know, if the issue involves a severe safety risk, you bypass the internal chain of command.
Absolutely. You escalate directly to the state. Your next step is filing a formal complaint with the Community Care Licensing Division.
Because they have the real power.
Exactly. Remember, they're the agency that holds the power to issue, suspend, or revoke the license. Anyone can file a formal complaint online or over the phone. And by law, the state is mandated to investigate every formal complaint they receive.
Beyond filing regulatory complaints, there is another layer of protection that many families completely overlook, and it is entirely free. I am talking about the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program.
The Ombudsman Program is an incredibly powerful resource. It is managed at the state level by the California Department of Aging, while the day-to-day operations are handled by local nonprofit organizations in your specific county.
I always think of the Ombudsman as a specialized defense attorney appointed strictly for the resident. But how do they actually wield power? They do not issue citations, right?
Correct. They're not regulatory inspectors. But they possess a unique legal authority granted by the California Department of Aging.
What can they actually do?
An ombudsman has the legal right to enter the facility unannounced. With a resident's permission, they can access medical and care records. Crucially, they do not work for the facility, and they do not work for the Regulatory Licensing Division.
So they are completely independent.
They operate independently to advocate for the residents' rights and mediate disputes.
That changes the entire power dynamic. If you are having a bitter dispute with management about the quality of the food, or if there's a complex disagreement about a care routine, the ombudsman steps in as a highly trained, neutral problem solver.
Yes, and they are very effective at it.
They can often mediate a resolution without forcing you into a hostile legal battle.
Knowing that this network of independent advocates exists should offer substantial peace of mind. You are never navigating the system in a vacuum. You have access to formal regulatory oversight, and you have access to confidential, on-the-ground advocacy.
We have analyzed a tremendous amount of legal architecture today. We have examined the social model paradigm, the boundaries of medication management, the mechanics of waivers, and the power of the ombudsman.
It is a lot to take in.
Now, we want to bring all of this back to your kitchen table. You have a stack of brochures and a major decision ahead of you. Let us outline a concrete action plan for you to tackle this week.
Start by building a focused shortlist. Select 3 or 4 facilities in your target area that seem viable based on your initial needs. Do not overcomplicate this step.
Next, take that shortlist and navigate directly to the California Department of Social Services online portal. Look up each facility and verify their license is active and in good standing.
Once you have verified the licenses, select just one facility from your list and open their most recent inspection report.
Just one for now.
Right. Spend 15 minutes analyzing the document. Familiarize yourself with the formatting. Locate a citation, identify whether it is type A or type B, and read the corresponding plan of correction. Get comfortable with the regulatory language.
Finally, use that analysis to draft a single, highly informed question. Keep it in your notes. When you are ready to schedule an in-person tour, you will walk through those doors equipped to ask a question that cuts straight through the marketing veneer. You will be speaking their language.
You will be prepared.
Which brings us to our California Care Compass editorial takeaway. We want to be absolutely uncompromising on this point. The RCFE license is merely the floor. It is never the ceiling.
The license represents the absolute minimum legal baseline required to operate in California. It ensures that the building meets fire codes. It guarantees that someone is awake and on duty at 2 a.m.
The bare necessities.
It mandates a baseline of physical survival. And it goes without saying, you should never place a vulnerable loved one in an unlicensed care setting.
But a state analyst cannot mandate a warm, empathetic culture. A regulatory code cannot enforce patience, humor, or genuine dignity. That piece of paper on the wall gets you in the door.
It really just secures the physical safety net.
But your intuition, your careful observation, and your understanding of your parents' unique personality will dictate whether a facility can truly become a home.
You leverage the state data to ruthlessly eliminate the inadequate options. Then you rely on your personal engagement to identify the community that vastly outpaces those minimum requirements.
Here's where it gets really interesting, and this is the thought we want you to carry with you as you review those brochures. The state of California dictates the minimum safety requirements, but what does your parents' personal ceiling look like?
That is the real question.
What are the non-negotiable emotional, cultural, or intellectual requirements that you need to prioritize, which absolutely no state inspector could ever measure on a clipboard? Define that ceiling before you sign a contract.
Makes all the difference.
Next time on The Deep Dive, we are going to narrow our focus considerably. We will explore the specialized world of six-bed residential board and care homes, analyzing why a smaller, hyper-local setting might offer the precise environment your family needs. Until then, take a deep breath. You are equipped for this.